Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the program. My name is William Hemsworth. It's great to be with you all today. Really excited to have our guest today, Dr. John Kilner. He received his BA from Yale University, his Master of Divinity from Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary, and Master of Arts and PhD from Harvard University. He held the Franklin and Dorothy Forman Endowed Chair in Ethics and Theology at Trinity International University, where he was also professor of bioethics and contemporary culture and director of bioethics degree programs. He's author of several books. His book, Dignity and Destiny, was recognized as Book of the Year honoree from Christianity Today. And most recently, he served as senior fellow at the Center for Bioethics and Human Dignity. Dr. Kilner, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing very well, William. Good to be with you.
My pleasure. Pleasure's all mine. Thanks so much for taking the time out on a Saturday morning to come talk to me about all the great work that you're doing.
Sure.
So I guess I want to start from the top. I guess for those that maybe don't know, what is bioethics and how'd you come to get involved in it?
Right. Well, it's not really as intimidating as it might seem. It's just bioethics. I mean, ethics is just, what's good and bad, what's right and wrong. So that's pretty much stuff of life. And bio, it just refers to, the area of life and health, like biology or biography, life and health. So when we're talking about ethical issues, tough decisions that have to be made in the realms of healthcare, biotechnology, we're talking bioethics.
Okay.
And
And
in terms of how I got involved in it, it's interesting. When I started my doctoral program, the first semester, because I was doing it in a broad range of ethics and contemporary culture kinds of issues, my first semester I took a bioethics course, and that's when the field as a field was just getting going, really. And I was hooked for life. I mean, here's a set of issues that are, on the one hand, intensely personal and critical to individuals and families. And yet, you go all the way up to societies, public policy, global issues where the future of the human race and human dignity are at issue. It's like, wow, what a critical set of issues.
Yeah, well, and can you give us what are some of those issues that are involved in it?
Sure, absolutely. Well, you can go across the lifespan, for example. So there are issues at the beginning of life. So we're talking about what are appropriate ways to bring people into existence. So we talk about reproductive decisions. There's like 40 ways to make a baby now, William.
Oh, wow. No,
So
had no
the
idea.
natural old-fashioned way is just one of those. And then bound up with that, that's where the whole genetics arena begins, because you might produce some embryos and genetically screen them and decide, well, I want a baby with this trait or that trait, or don't want one with this trait or that trait. And so this idea of genetics and making our genetic makeup the way we want it to be, there's a whole set of issues there. And of course, when you're talking about beginning of life, then if there are some children we don't want to have, then that's where the abortion issue connects with all of that. But you can go all the way to the end of life, and there are many critical questions, like how long you need to persist treating before it's okay to stop. When we talk about, pulling the plug, but when you just say, yeah, can you ever have too much? Can you ever add suffering to a dying process that would be inappropriate to do? And how far can we go to try to manage those things? Can we go all the way to so-called assisted suicide or euthanasia? So those issues arise there. And then, everywhere in between, as I say, there's all sorts of genetics questions in between. There's issues related to stem cell research. And we hear, occasionally talk of human cloning. So various biotechnologies, and now coming down the pike, artificial intelligence. And are machines, or can machines be the same thing as human beings? And what are the ethical issues there? So just, oh, it ranges all the way from, big society things all the way down to individual, personal, family decisions.
Now, in regard to assisted suicide, there's a big push about it. I mean, some nations have legalized it. I mean, what's the, from a Christian perspective, what is wrong with assisted suicide as a whole?
Well, you know, I appreciate you're using the term assisted suicide because as people encounter this legislative initiatives to legalize the practice, they've used wording for this that just doesn't express what it is. You know, the most common terminology is like medical aid in dying. Well, who doesn't want the aid of medical help when you're dying? You know, and like it implies that, oh no, it's illegal now for medicine to aid you, to help you in your dying process, but we'd like to make it legal, you know? So who's going to say what a problem with that? But it is, it's not just aid in dying. It's enabling or helping people to kill themselves. And so that's where the word suicide comes. It doesn't matter to me if that's a pejorative term and you want to use other terminology to talk about helping people to kill themselves. That's okay. But we need to be honest. That's what we're talking about. So the question is life mine to do with what I want to? Now, that's what you'll hear, of course, in society, because if there is no God, then what is there? You know, there's just me and the universe. So I'll do whatever I want to do. From a Christian perspective, that's problematic, though. I mean, we know from 1 Corinthians 6, you know, that as it says, our life is not our own. We've been bought at a price. So not only is God our creator, and so our life is it whatever we want it to be? No, we're created in the image of God, Genesis 1 and all the way through scripture. And so that means we have a different agenda as to what we are to, how we are to live. Genesis 9:6 says we are not to take any human life. That includes your own. Why? Because every human being is created in the image of God. Because you're not your own, you are to live, you know, in accordance with God's purposes for you. Now, God is very compassionate and merciful, absolutely. But compassion does not mean assisted suicide. Now, we have organizations out there publicly that even use the word in their title, but compassion, it comes from two root words, cum and passio, meaning suffering with, or in the sense of enduring with. So compassion means providing the supports that people need to go through a difficult time. It doesn't mean killing the person and no longer needing any support. That would be like the opposite of compassion. That would be very uncompassionate. So I think that the issue here for Christian, I mean, we can get into more specifics. I mean, you can see how Paul in Philippians 1 will not engage in even considering the idea of ending his life. You could go through Job and see how he absolutely, despite incredible suffering, will not take his life into his own hands. You can see the person who assisted Saul in his suicide and how King David didn't reward him. He was horrified, actually had the man killed. And you can see Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, who was just, oh God, you know, please take this pain and suffering from me, but not my will, but yours be done. There's the ultimate affirmation that our lives are God's. We're created in God's image. We have a different agenda, not whatever we want in order to avoid pain and suffering.
So what can we do as Christians to help maybe combat this movement towards assisted suicide?
Well, I think that there's a couple of things. One thing I really want to emphasize here, and that is that Christians ought to be known more for what they're for than what they're against. Now, yes, okay, you know, along the way, in order to be who we are to be, we will reject certain things as being inconsistent with that. But what Christians are about is about bearing one another's burdens, Galatians 6:2, or about compassion, as I talked about providing people the supports they need in order to bear up under the difficulties that life throws at us. So that's what we're about. And so I think what we need to do is to not only talk that way, to talk as much about this is what we're for. We reject physician-assisted suicide because there's a better way. And we really want to major on that, but we need to live that way. And that's the thing that I would emphasize. And so you might say, well, what are the needs then? What are the supports that people need in end-of-life situations? And they include, first of all, adequate health care. So if people are not getting access to the health care they need, and sometimes it's very simple practical barriers, you know, like transportation or some monetary things or whatever, we can help with that. Secondly, people need effective pain management. So so much more is available now, and so much so that when you actually now do the surveys of people who are electing physician-assisted suicide, the idea of pain is like way down the list. It's just not really the main reason. So when you trot out these stories of, oh, look at this person suffering, we have to legalize this practice, in actuality, that's not the case. It's because so much more is available now in terms of effective pain management, but we got to need to make sure that people are accessing that. Thirdly, they need effective suffering management. And suffering is different than pain. Pain is a biological, physical experience. Suffering is kind of an existential threat to our identity, you know, our sense of meaning and purpose. And you can have suffering without biological pain. You can have biological pain without suffering. Suffering is where the spiritual and emotional crises come. And so we can provide the support that people need there. And then finally, fourthly, I would just flag the fact that people need to have a sense that they have some sort of control in the situation. I just mean in the sense of some sort of an assurance that their beliefs and values and priorities will be respected in the end-of-life healthcare decision-making process. And I think the way that we do that is by making sure that everybody has an advance directive and everybody has access to the help they need to make God-honoring end-of-life medical decisions.
And speaking of advanced directives, you recently worked on a website and created a website. It's medicaldecisions.info to help people do that type of thing. What brought that idea on?
Well, basically, just what I've said, when you look at what people are needing and why people are reverting to physician-assisted suicide, so often it has to do with the sense of, okay, I see myself, you know, diminishing in some respect, maybe heading toward some dementia or other developing form of illness that's going to make it hard for me to make the medical decisions. And so they're like, I desperately don't want to then just end up being the pawn of, you know, some healthcare system or whatever's going on. So it's that lack of ability to manage responsibly one's own life. And so I recognized, you know, for a long time, I would just use, in terms of helping people, use the various forms that exist out there. And the problem is, you know, that you start with a certain format, and then that shapes, you know, that just kind of limits what you're doing or how you have to go about doing it. And so in talking with people and what the problem was with various forms that are out there, this idea emerged, well, how could, if we're not going to start with a form, if we're going to create a form while we're thinking through what are our values and priorities are, there would need to be some sort of like organic interactive process being done, like on a computer or online or, you know, something like that. And so as we explored, you know, I have the knowledge level about the issues about end of life decision making. But I needed to work with a computer graphics and programming company to put this together. And the thought was, Okay, people don't like, you know, you don't want just want a long article or book online. People don't like to, read long things like that. In fact, people don't really like to read a lot. It's not their favored form of learning. People are really today enjoying, you see the whole gaming thing and everything. I mean, people like to interact with what's going on online. And so the idea just emerged. Well, what if we had thought of this in terms of like a journey down a pathway through a set of beautiful natural scenes? And the idea being every time the path forks into two pathways, each of those pathways would represent a set of a choice, basically a priority. I value this over that, or I think this is true rather than that being true. And so you would see what the choice is at that pathway branch. You would make the choice, and you would move down the pathway and into the next scene. And then there'd be another branch, and you'd have another choice. So that by the time you come to the end of your journey through a number of different scenes, you would have on the screen, you could save electronically, or you could print right there a legally valid advanced directive that is tailored to your specific values and priorities. So that's the idea. You can use the resource medicaldecisions.info either to develop an advanced directive, which will allow you to identify who's going to make the decisions for you if you can't make them anymore, and what values and beliefs do you want them to respect when they do that. You can use it for an advanced directive, which every adult human being should have, William. I want to note that. And then, or you can use it for a current decision, a current medical decision. It's going to tell you what information you need from your doctor, and then it'll walk you through the series of scenes, and it'll actually help you identify what of your treatment options are in line with your beliefs and values.
I go to the doctor at the local veterans hospital here, and I'll be honest, I don't have an advanced directive. And like you said, I need one. I have four children, married almost 20
Yes,
years, and it has to
absolutely.
happen. It has to
Absolutely.
happen. But whenever I go there and say I don't have them, they hand me this thick packet, and I'm like, oh gosh. And I go on your website, I go on the website you made, and it's like I said before we started talking, it's not intimidating at all. You answer some questions, and at the end of it, there it is. There's the 3-page document. It was really, really simple. So I encourage everyone to go on medicaldecisions.info and do that if you haven't done so already. But what feedback have you received on this website?
Yeah, I'll tell you why people are really excited about it. It's intentionally developed so that it is not overtly religious or Christian or anything. Like when you come on it, it's just like, okay, this is going to help you identify your values, your priorities, that sort of thing. So absolutely anybody could use it and not be intimidated. It's not like, oh, this is a Christian site, or it's not telling you need to have these Christian values or these priorities. It's not going to say you need to do this or you have to avoid this or whatever. So on the one hand, that's one of the great values, getting great response from Christian believers and non-believers alike because of that. It's very accessible for anyone. However, I mean, Christians should know that there are a few things built into it, if they're thinking of going through it themselves or using it with friends or family members, including those who are not believers. And those include a couple of things. First of all, if people are going way out on one extreme, for example, one extreme of over-treatment is if they're like, do everything possible to the last possible second, no matter what, no matter how much suffering you're adding to a dying process that can't even be avoided, which I refer to as an idolatry of technology. Then you reach a screen where a choice where it's like, you know what? You may not realize it, but most people find that a problematic way to go. Would you be interested if you want, would you like to see a short 4-minute video that that, you know, explains what the difficulties people might have with that. So you can elect to watch it or not. It's up to you. And similarly, at the other end of the spectrum, under treatment, you're like, yeah, I'd like to consider assisted suicide as an option here. You know, then it'll say again, well, you know, most people find that's rather problematic. Would you be interested in seeing, you know, if you want to see a short 4-minute video to better understand that, you can. If you don't want to, you don't have to. So you see, it's not, you know, it's not pushing any agendas. It's just flagging when you're kind of at one end of the spectrum or the other, in case you want a little more information on that. And there's one other place where you encounter the opportunity to see a video, and that everybody, no matter what choices you make, will encounter at some point. That is, it said, you know, the decision that you make may end up ending your life a little bit sooner or a little bit later, and you have to weigh the pros and cons of your options. So what will being dead, what will that be like? I mean, is that a plus, a minus? Like, what is it? If you just to make an informed consent decision, you really need to have some view of what being dead will be like. So if you'd like to clarify your thinking here and watch a 4-minute video to see one view of that, regardless of your views, just to help kind of prod you think about what your views are, you can watch a short 4-minute video. You know, if people are like, no, I'm not interested in that, that's fine. They'll just continue on whatever pathway they're on. But if they do look at that, then what they get is, well, let's just take for one view, a view where somebody has died and they've come back to tell us like what it's all about. So that would be Jesus Christ and the view we encounter in the Bible. So they will then see what the Bible has to say about that, which of course includes the gospel message and story. So it is something that's where Christian feedback has been really enthusiastic, not only for themselves to be able to formulate an advanced directive or a current decision, but also something that they can share or do with family members, including unbelieving family members, and have a really natural opportunity to have some really rich discussions about critical issues, eternal issues.
One of the concerns that people have when it comes to doing stuff online is their personal information. Does your website require any personal information to go through this journey at all?
Right. I appreciate you asking that, William, because yeah, there's that question. There's, am I going to be battered with advertising, and right, how much do I have to pay to end up with this like legal document where I can do this without hiring an expensive lawyer? Well, answer all three of those. First of all, you don't enter a shred of personal information. It is like completely private. So you can just go through, make your choices, end up at the end, save or print your document, and nobody will have any information about you whatsoever. You don't pay a cent. All the costs of this were paid in advance by people supporting the project. So it's completely free to use and there's no advertising. So it's just this experience as if you had this, you know, game at home. And if you are a Christian and want to go through this site, use and bring to bear Christian perspectives on that, because that's your own, you know, decision making. We have put material on a church-based website to help people understand, well, you know, in a pithy way, kind of a bullet point sort of way, mm-hmm, how does the Bible help or guide us through these end of life decisions? Actually, a site actually addresses end of life decisions and beginning of life reproductive decisions. So I'll just mention that. It's harvestbible.org/medical. So harvestbible.org/medical. And because I just want people to know that because sometimes Christians do this, like, this is a great tool, but I find as a Christian, you know, so I have some of the pathways or choices I have to make, and I want to be God honoring, and I've never really thought much about these issues. I don't know what the Bible would have to say, you know, to guide me. So we have made that available, but on a different site.
Right. And for those wondering, if you, because the question may come up, okay, if no personal information is out there, How does my information get on this document? Well, when I pulled mine up, when I got to the end, you just write your name in, or you could go in there, you type it, you know, whatever, and you print it off, and it's done. It's pretty simple. So I will affirm that this website does not require any personal information. You go on, you do your decisions, pray over the questions, and go through, do your thing. It's a great thing. I think it's a great tool you developed. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome, William.
And before I let you go to enjoy the rest of your Saturday, what other things are you up to lately? You've been kind of busy. I saw you were preaching at Osbury a few days ago.
Right, exactly.
What other things do you have going on in the future?
Yeah, well, a big thing for me, a big area of interest is not only the specific issues of bioethics, but kind of the foundation of it. It's kind of like, do people really matter? I mean, is there such a thing as human dignity? Why should we even be concerned about assisted suicide at one end of the life or the beginning of life? You know, people have encountered in the news this focus down in Alabama on in vitro fertilization, you know, so-called test tube babies. And like, is that okay? And is there a way to do it, you know, without killing human beings at the embryonic stage of their life or not? And so why would that matter? Why does human life and human dignity matter? And so, you know, I have done a lot of work on that, especially the Christian foundation of that. And that's the notion, of course, of people being created in the image of God. But there are a lot of misunderstandings about what that involves. And so, you know, you mentioned the book length project on that, Dignity and Destiny, which is really trying to lay out to correct many mistaken. When that idea is misunderstood, it can be used in a very harmful way, even though when it's rightly understood, it can be used in a very liberating way. And so I've been, you know, working on that and then kind of comparing that with, well, if you don't have biblical Christianity, do you really have a basis, a satisfactory basis for why people matter? And applying that to all these different issues in bioethics. And I don't think you do. I engaged in another project looking at comparing, you know, a biblical Christian perspective with a whole range of other perspectives. And boy, did that underscore for me why it's so important that there is a God, you know, that otherwise it's just like trying to like jump up into the air and say, I'm just going to jump up in the air and stay up there. And it's like, oh, I don't think so, unless you have something you're holding on to above you. You're just going to come back down. What lifts you up is the fact that there is something or someone who is holding you up. And that's where our dignity comes from, our creation and redemption by a loving God. So I'm working on both the kind of the notions of human dignity and also their applications in all these issues of bioethics.
Dr. Kilner, thank you so much for coming on, explaining what you're doing, talking about assisted suicide, the great website that you've developed. Thanks for spending some time with us on this Saturday morning. I really appreciate it.
Well, sure. And thank you, William, for the wonderful job you're doing, getting thinking about these things out to help people. Thanks.
Thank you. Have a great day and God bless.
You too. Bye-bye.